of our healthcare, our education, our homes, our communication, and even our government. Today, most babies are born in for-profit hospitals. Their medical claims are paid for by for-profit insurance. As children grow, many go to for-profit charter schools or private schools, and our public education system continues to crumble. Young adults are forced to deal with for-profit lenders to go to college at for-profit universities, and everything from their backpack to their first home will generate a profit for someone on Wall Street. Throughout our lives, we're forced into paying huge monopolies for access to phones and internet and communications, and all that data is turned over to for-profit corporations who spy on us for our government. Even the vast majority of our elected leaders answer first to corporate lobbyists and second to the American people. Corporate power has a stranglehold on the entire American existence, and it has turned our entire lives into a profit-making venture. There is a place for profit in our world and a reason for corporations, but we must shift the power back to actual people. Without us, corporations would have no production to make their goods and no customers from which to make a profit. Businesses should be here to serve American needs, not control us and commercialize everything that we do. We must regain our power by declaring that corporations are not people and money is not speech. Only then can we stop the cycle of profit before people. In screwed news, contractors in Japan are recruiting the homeless to clean up the crippled Fukushima nuclear power plant. Recruiters are being paid as much as $100 a person to round up homeless men and convince them to work cleaning up that disaster for less than minimum wage. Because the cleanup process is so massive, it's nearly impossible for regulators to ensure workers are paid fairly or trained properly. It means that many workers are likely being abused, and this dangerous project is being completed by people who are not qualified. Workers are clearing away rubble, removing the topsoil, and scrubbing homes around the crippled plant, but only a third of the taxpayer dollars meant for wages actually makes it into their paychecks. And no one knows if the decontamination is being done correctly. There's nothing wrong with a government stepping up to be the employer of last resort, but when it comes to Fukushima, the Japanese government must make sure that workers are treated fairly, paid fairly, and properly trained. In the best of the rest of the news, as of Wednesday, millions of Americans have health insurance thanks to Obamacare. Many of those now covered have gone years without insurance, and they have delayed or gone without much needed medical care. But that long wait is finally over. Insurance companies can no longer deny someone for a pre-existing condition. They can't charge women higher rates than men, and they can't set a so-called lifetime limit on the cost of someone's medical care. The health care law has finally started to ensure that Americans have access to basic preventative care, and it'll protect millions from being overwhelmed by medical debt. There's still much work to be done to improve the Affordable Care Act, but to the millions of Americans who finally have coverage, this is a great start. According to Radcast.org, there have been false rumors floating around about Fukushima's Building 3 melting down and radiation readings in California of over 500 counts per minute. Radcast reports that neither of these rumors are true. Radiation levels are fairly calm throughout our nation, although they are still spiking in some areas. Charleston, West Virginia is reporting levels of 44 counts per minute with spikes of 65, and Salisbury, Mass. Is sitting at 44 with peaks of 54 counts per minute. Lakewood, Colorado is averaging 62 with highs of 95 counts per minute, and Spearfish, South Dakota is at 55 with spikes of 76. Portland, Oregon is hovering at 30 counts a minute with peaks of 46, and Chino Valley, Arizona is sitting at 54 with spikes of 79. Radcast.org's alert level is 100 counts per minute, but they remind us that there is no safe level of radiation. Marijuana prohibition is finally over in Colorado. As of January 1st, recreational marijuana sales began in that state for the first time in 70 years. Although there was some heavy snow at times, customers lined up early outside 37 stores throughout Colorado to participate in the historic first day of sales. Rocky Mountain State expects to collect millions in tax and tourism revenue because of the new law, and marijuana smokers will have to follow strict regulations. Buyers must be over the age of 21. They may only purchase limited quantities, and they may not smoke in public places. Rob Campia of the Marijuana Policy Project said, "Colorado is demonstrating to the rest of the nation and the entire world that regulating marijuana works. Hopefully more states will recognize that soon." And finally, it's 2014, and it wouldn't be a new year without a few new conspiracy theories about President Obama. The latest far-fetched prediction came from James Garrow, a contributor to Alex Jones's InfoWars. According to Mr. Garrow, President Obama is going to use Canadians, the United Nations, and extraterrestrial life forms to boost his own poll numbers. Yep, you heard that right. Jim Garrow managed to top his previous ridiculous claim that President Obama was going to order nuclear attacks against American cities. Some conspiracy theories can be dangerous as they can lead to fear, distrust, or panic among Americans, but I think the UN and space aliens working together to change polling numbers is a bit out there, even by Alex Jones' standards. And that's the way it is today, Thursday, January 2nd, 2014. I'm Tom Hartman on the news.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. I need an occasion to recover from my vacation. Do you have that feeling? It's like, whoa. Oh, man. The New York Times today, in an editorial by the editorial board, came out and said Ed Snowden should be given, they didn't use the word amnesty or pardon, but clemency was the word that they used. And in other words, you know, cut the guy some slack. I think, you know, what they're suggesting is, you know, let him plead guilty to something that gets him a year in jail kind of thing. But he's certainly looking at a minimum of 10, 20 years in jail for the things he's already been charged with. And as the New York Times editorial board points out, if he shows up, it'll be enough to be life in jail. Which raises the question, if Edward Snowden is a hero and a whistleblower, what's Chelsea Manning? Isn't she one too? And so anyway, that, you know, there are a lot of things I want to share with you today. And we'll just kind of leave the lines open, as it were. You know, pretty much anything you want to talk about is fine with me, too. 10 hopeful things that happened in 2013. I wanted to talk about, I think it's Jahi McMath, this young girl, this 13-year-old girl who went to the hospital to have her tonsils out. And somebody screwed up something. And she's now brain dead. She was declared brain dead a couple of weeks before Christmas. And her parents want to keep her body, or keep her, I mean, depending on how you look at this, want to keep her alive, which is possible with a feeding tube and a ventilator, as long as possible, presumably in the hopes that she will just, like, suddenly wake up or something. But maybe they just, you know, want to keep her there. I'm not inside their minds, and they haven't, to the best of my knowledge, provided any great details on their thinking. The Terry Schiavo Foundation has gotten involved in this and says that they should be allowed to keep her alive. The hospital is saying, basically, she meets the California state definition of dead. She is a dead person. And so they should not have to engage in any further medical services for her because she's dead. And this is, you know, apparently, now here's the problem. You go looking for stories of people who've been declared brain dead and then woke up, and what you get is stuff like from Breitbart and the Straits Times in Singapore, not exactly the most credible sources. Huffington Post had one. This woman had done a massive overdose, and then she woke up. This is very, very rare. But she had not been through all the tests that this girl has been through. So, but what it's coming down to is, what I think it's going to come down to, and this is where it gets really tough, is, oh, that's sweet. Sue Nethica just sent me a Happy New Year with a logo. Hi, Sue. Thank you for that. In our chat room, you can drop in and say hi over at TomHartman.com. It's free. In any case, where this is going to come down, I think, is should the hospital have the authority or the power to say, this girl is dead, we're going to turn off the machines, when the parents don't want them to? And the parents are talking about, we will transport her to a facility that will care for her. Now, I'm sure that facility will care for her at quite a price, and because this is a 13-year-old girl who went in to have her tonsils removed, and she's now brain dead, I'm guessing that there's some significant money at play here. That the facility that would care for this girl or for her body, however you want to describe it, is going to make some serious bucks. I mean, you know, what, a lifetime of caring for basically a dead person. So on the one hand, you know, is that right that the hospital should be able to say, she's dead, sorry, see you later, you know, we're sending her to the coroner? Or should they have just done that in the ER and never involved the parent? You know, I don't know how this all played out. Or should the family be able to say, you know, we're going to do it our way, and if we can get a court to award us a damage settlement from the, presumably the insurance company from the hospital, that's going to be enough to keep our daughter alive for years or weeks or months, whatever their intention is, we're going to do that. And I think I could probably argue either side of that, although common sense, my personal sensibility, let's say, I don't think it's necessarily common sense, but my personal sensibility is that if it were me, and Louise and I had this conversation this morning, she said, you know, if I'm ever brain dead, pull the plug, please. And I said, yeah, ditto, same here. You know, I would not want her to have to spend the rest of her life fretting about, you know, whether I'm getting bed sores or whatever. And when there's no me there, you know. But on the other hand, you know, I'm the parent of three children. And if it was my own kid and there was even a thousandth of a percent hope, and the hospital's insurance would pay for it, might I not say, well, you know, let's hang on there? I mean, this is one of those never walked a mile in their shoes, so I don't know things. I find it fascinating. Just fascinating. The NSA program, by the way, which I think this really should be called the Bush NSA program, that the New York Times is saying, let's not prosecute Snowden over releasing the details on this thing, the Bush NSA program. The White House review panel on NSA surveillance said that this program has not stopped any terrorist attacks. Really? All this money, all this time, all this effort, all these billions of dollars to these private contractors. And meanwhile, I've got, oh, this is cute from today's. I'm sure this started on Facebook, given the format, but it's picture Jimmy Carter. It says, "Good morning, I'm Jimmy Carter. Today's my 88th birthday. I created 10.3 million jobs in my single term when the top tax rate was 70%. I created more jobs than four of the last five Republican presidents. No wonder the Republicans want to write off my presidency as a failure." Isn't that great? Bernie Sanders has laid out a basically, you know, I think a platform for the Democratic Party to run on. And Ronald sent me a platform based on my book, The Crash of 2016. He said, you know, here's what I got out of this. You should think about this. An interesting list, 10 hopeful things that happened in 2013 that we will get to from Yes Magazine. There's a bunch of interesting stuff I want to get to today.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And perhaps most important, the public health crisis that is being caused by the unemployment crisis among our young people. I'll tell you about that. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Nate Sweet, producer with The Big Picture, on the line with us. Hey, Nate.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good, good. So, Edward Snowden and clemency, what do you think?
I think it's an interesting prospect. I would certainly agree with it. I don't know if it's going to happen, but
I can predict it won't.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet. Might be safer than betting on a lot of things, so put your money on that one. But, I mean, I think it's still significant that you have two of the most important newspapers in the country, in the world, probably, and now some former Obama administration officials saying that they're sympathetic toward the idea of giving Snowden clemency. Especially in the wake of one NSA official in that, you know, very appropriately criticized 60 Minutes interview. He said he was open to the idea of amnesty or a pardon.
Yeah, although he's walked that back since then.
Right.
He wants to keep his job. But anyhow, we're going to discuss that with Mike Paventoni, along with a few other things.
Right. We're going to tie that to sort of the ongoing state of whistleblower laws in the United States and the new ruling by a judge in New York, by Judge Corman, that border officials can randomly search your laptop or any other – they can search the contents of your laptop or any other electronic devices without a warrant at border crossings and
right,
trains.
Right, because that's merely an inconvenience.
Right, right. He said there's no reasonable expectation of privacy in that moment, and I think Pap will disagree with that. So
yeah, I suspect, although in this case, I mean, this kid, this young man had both an American and a French passport.
Right.
He had been to a couple of Islamic countries. He had had the visas in his French passport, not his American passport. And when they opened his laptop, they saw pictures.
Hezbollah images, right?
Yeah, Hamas and stuff like that. And it was like, you know, what's going on here?
I think he was an Islamic studies scholar. So
he was.
It would make sense.
He was. He was working on his PhD.
Yeah.
But, you know, he had the beard and the whole bit. And he from the point of view of this border agent, hey, maybe we've got one here. Let's take a look. This is one of those ones, too, where...
I mean, I guess the instance would be, do we really want border security agents taking, you know, judge, jury, and executioner on themselves?
But they didn't play executioner. I mean, what they did was, this is the fine line between reasonable cause and, what's the phrase? Reasonable suspicion and probable cause, right? And reasonable suspicion can lead to essentially an arrest. And that's what they did, a stop, like a traffic stop. And what the government is arguing is that's what they did with this guy's computer. Probable cause is necessary for prosecution, and they didn't do that.
Right. This probably wouldn't have led to a trial, but
right.
It could have led to obviously, you know, law enforcement taking action against him.
So anyway, I'm of two minds on that one.
Yeah.
Anyhow, SeaTac minimum wage workers might not get their raise, really?
Right. It's one of the big progressive pieces of legislation that passed this in November in the elections. But some of the city's employers have filed suit to try to block that measure from going into effect. And it's interesting, it sort of came about, this news of the suit kind of came about at the same time as Bill de Blasio was inaugurated. So we're going to have Richard Eskow come on the show, talk about, you know, the emerging sense that there's a progressive push in the Democratic Party and seeing whether or not, you know, whether that's going to be successful and not giving the odds that are stacked up against it.
Right. And Kevin Camps is going to drop by from Beyond Nuclear.
Yeah, the sailors from the USS Ronald Reagan who helped out with the Fukushima cleanup are refiling suit because they claim radiation poisoning.
Yeah, they are sick as a dog, these young men.
Not being reported at all in the mainstream media, but we'll have it here in the big picture.
There you go. Nate Sweet. Thanks a lot, Nate.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking with you. I'll see you in a couple hours. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. I want to start playing around with some, getting some good royalty-free indie music for our bumpers, you know. We could do a lot with that. Anyway, seven ripoffs the capitalists would like to keep out of the media. This was in Common Dreams before the end of the year, but it's worthy of note. I'm just going to throw a few things out here, and then, you know, after the bottom of the hour, I'll pick up your phone calls. We've already got seven lines lit up right now, but hang on, and I will get to you, I promise. Number one, corporations are profiting from food stamps. Yes, they are. The banksters who handle the money, and of course, the, you know, J.P. Morgan in particular, Xerox and e-funds. Crash the economy, get your money back, as the financial industry did. Die with a student loan, stay in debt. Yes, if you die with your student loan, well, if any of my kids die with their student loans, I'm going to have to pay them off because I co-signed them. And this is, you know, not only are they taking the money of the millennials and the Gen Xers, but if they croak, they're taking their boomer parents' money. 70% of corporations aren't required to pay any federal taxes. Lotteries pay for corporate tax avoidance. The NFL pays no federal taxes. You can live on Park Avenue and get a farm subsidy. Yes, it's true. How to turn a dollar into $100,000. Basically, you know, go in the business of selling printer ink or bottled water. So this is capitalism. But this public health crisis thing, I thought this was fascinating. This over Common Dreams today. Sarah Lazare is a staff writer for Common Dreams. And the headline is Nothing to Live For: Youth Unemployment, Depression, and Austerity. New study finds long-term youth unemployment taking severe mental toll. And basically what they're finding is that young people, 40% of jobless young people, and there's a lot of jobless young people out there, and there's they did 2,161 interviews, and this is all in the UK, but I think we can reasonably extrapolate. We've had Reaganomics for 32 years. They've had Thatcheronomics for 34 years, so it's basically the same thing. 40% of jobless young people have faced symptoms of mental illness, including suicidal thoughts, feelings of self-loathing, and panic attacks as a direct result of unemployment. Nearly a third have contemplated suicide. That youth unemployment, and it's not just youth unemployment, of course. The other big unreported story is the people who are in their 50s and early 60s who are being laid off, who are losing their jobs because, you know, companies like Bain Capital come in and buy up their company, and they lay off the most highly paid people, who are typically the people who've been around longest. And then those folks, you know, can't find a job because they're, you know, 50-year-olds who are making, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80,000 bucks a year can't find a job like that again. And then when they try to compete with 20-year-olds for a $20,000 a year job, the employer won't hire them. They'll hire the 20-year-old because they're figuring this guy's going to wait and get a, you know, he's always going to be looking for the old, better job. And the boomers, the older people, end up with no job at all for years and years. And then John Boehner comes along, and Eric Cantor and Paul Ryan, and says, oh, and by the way, to hell with their unemployment insurance, and cuts them off. Which takes us back to Wednesday, September 18th, 2002, when the BBC published More Suicides Under Conservative Rule. The suicide rate under conservative governments increases. This was not an op-ed. This was an actual news story. This Australian team analyzed suicide statistics from 1901 to 1998. And then they looked at the political regimes. They took into account periods of drought and World War II and factored them out. And after adjusting for these factors, the figures clearly, I'm quoting from the BBC, the figures clearly show the highest rates of suicide occurred when both conservative state and federal governments were in power. At the very end, they say, overall, they say, the figures suggest that 35,000 people would not have died had conservatives not been in power. equivalent to one suicide every day of the 20th century or two for every day that the conservatives ruled. So is it time for us? I mean, this is like, and I just want to remind you, apropos of this article that I shared with you back the first week of December. Jesus Malverde had reposted it over at DU, and it originally came from the BBC. And, you know, the rats where you put them in the cage and they just hit cocaine, cocaine, and cocaine and keep taking the cocaine until they die? You can replicate that experiment all day long, and it always does the same thing. The rats will take the cocaine until they die, as long as they are locked up in a little tiny cage. Now, if you were in a jail cell and you were offered unlimited amount of cocaine until you die, might you not do that too? But when they put the rats in what they call a rat park, in other words, an area that's like the size that a normal rat would, you know, it's just thousands of square feet, and the rats can run, and they got places to hide and play and other rats and, you know, food. And when they put them in the rat park, and over in the corner, there's the cocaine distribution thing. Every now and then, the rat will go over and get a little hit of cocaine and get high. But they don't kill themselves. Isn't there a lesson for all of us in this? I mean, the kind of pressure that a crappy economy produces is leading to problems like addiction, suicide, mental illness. This is a public health crisis. Capitalism has failed. Crony capitalism is killing us. Our government has been taken over by big, you know, transnational corporations because of a doctrine from the Supreme Court. And there are a couple of fairly simple solutions to this. And the first one is to make the government the employer of last resort like FDR did.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
In other words, real simple. Bring back the WPA and the CCC. Put everybody who wants to work back to work with a good paying job. And finally, George W. Bush. Bless him, St. George. He promised to free Iraq of al-Qaeda. Now, the debate that went on in Fox News for over 2 years was whether one al-Qaeda guy had ever had a conversation with, and I think it was in Belgium or something, with one guy who worked for Saddam Hussein. This was the basis that Don Rumsfeld and George Bush wanted to invade Iraq on. Oh, they had a connection to al-Qaeda, you know. But there was no al-Qaeda operating in Iraq because al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein hated each other. Al-Qaeda wanted to run the country according to Islamic principles, and Saddam Hussein ran a secular nation. No official religion. You don't have to follow the religious dictates. Women could wear pants, they could work, they could go to college, they could drive, they could show their elbows. Al-Qaeda wanted to change all that. So we went over and we spent trillions of dollars, probably $4 or $5 trillion when all is said and done. Easily enough to send every young person who wants to go to college for the next 3 decades for free. We went over there and we spent that, and that, not to mention 4,000 or 5,000 American lives and hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives, and we screwed up the lives of at least 5 million Iraqis who were displaced, who had to move, whose lives were ruined. We covered the country with depleted uranium. There's an explosion in birth defects, all to keep al-Qaeda out of Iraq. Let me read you the headline in the New York Times at this moment, and then I will pick up your phone calls. Parts of two key Iraqi cities fall to al-Qaeda group active in Syria. And then the lead paragraph. Radical Sunni militants aligned with al-Qaeda freed prisoners, torched police stations, and seized mosques on Thursday in Fallujah and Ramadi, two of Iraq's most important cities. George Bush. There has to be a special place in hell reserved for people who lie their countries into war. And well, I was going to say, and don't even do it competently, but that kind of minimizes the impact of what I was saying. Anyhow, Helena, or is it Helena in Fort Lauderdale, Florida?
Yes, it's Selena.
Hi, Helena. You wanted to talk about the case of this young woman who is apparently brain dead.
Yes, and you know, there's two sides to every story, and I actually worked with a woman who was in her late 40s, who in her 30s was brain dead for 30 days.
Hmm.
Her family couldn't bring themselves to unplug the machine, okay? Right. Back then, though, they didn't have all these transplants and everything, so they didn't hound you every 20 minutes for the organs. And healthcare was more focused on the patient than it was on the money. I also had a fiancé who was on life support, and 3 days later, they disconnected everything, which I wasn't married to him at the time, and it drove me crazy because I wanted to give him at least 30 days.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you never know.
Yeah.
I've met people who had organ transplants and have lived on to see their grandkids. I understand both sides, mm-hmm. but I don't think if a family doesn't want to disconnect the machine, let it be. Don't disconnect the machine.
Yeah.
Because at some point, the life support machine will fail, and that person will go away regardless. Okay, there's a point where the body just can't do it anymore, and they actually die, which is why they were every 20 minutes when my fiance was on life support. They were there every 20 minutes asking for their organs because they said at some point, you know, his body's the machine's not going to be able to support him, and then we can't harvest them, and blah blah blah. Mm. So you know, a lot of people say, "Oh, she's brain dead," and just give up. No. Let the family deal with it. They want to keep her on life support, then keep her on life support. If that's how you want to, and if that's what your gut is telling you, then do what your gut says. You know, it's just this health care in this country has gotten ridiculous.
Well, I don't think this is so much a comment on our health care system as it is. I mean, most. I don't think this is about health care. I think it's about ethics. This is a question of who should be able to make the decision. Should it be her family or should it be her doctors about when she's dead and when to give up? And you're making a, you know, your personal conviction is that it should be her family. I'm inclined to agree, although I would say I would be the first person to sign an advance declaration. And in fact, I think I have, that says that if I'm in the condition of this young girl, pull the plug, please.
Exactly. Because let me tell you, having been in that situation, people need to do living wills.
Yeah.
Because I've already told my family, no organs. No. I go with everything. I'll apologize to everybody who dies that day with me who didn't get my organs. When I get to heaven, I'll tell them, I'm sorry, dude, it was just not meant to be.
Yeah.
But I don't want my family having to go through those decisions for me. You know what I'm saying? Because...
Yeah.
Having been there, it's an impossible decision.
Oh yeah, yeah, and where this gets really difficult is that this is a 13-year-old girl, and she couldn't have signed an advance directive to begin with, and even if she did, it would have been contested as you know, she's not an adult. Helena, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for your thoughtful commentary on that. Jeffrey in New York, hey Jeffrey, what's up?
Hi, Mr. Hartman. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you too.
Happy family. Thank you. I agree with the previous caller.
Mm-hmm.
I'm under the suspicion that there, because this Dr. David Duran, he's the Children's Hospital's chief pediatric officer,
mm-hmm.
and that he's too anxious to pull a plug.
Yeah.
I suspect that hospital, that whatever it is, the harvesting agency, organ harvesting agency, they just want to harvest the organs.
You think they want to pull the plugs because they want the organ? I mean, you know, that is going to be, I mean, there are long waiting lists for organs, and so it literally will mean that somebody could live or die as a consequence of this. But on the other hand, you would go with the Terry Schiavo path and say, let the family keep her alive, keep her body alive, keep her alive as long as...
I wouldn't categorize her as a Terry Schiavo, but as a personal issue.
Yeah.
And it's a personal issue to the family, and I think that it's just that they want to harvest her organs. That's what I believe they want to do.
Yeah.
And I say the family should sue them.
Well, I'm sure they will.
Get their own pathologist to find out what happened to her.
Right.
What caused her to go into this? It's a tonsillectomy. Come on.
Right. Yeah. Obviously something went very wrong, and it probably went wrong with the anesthesia, although who knows? I mean, lots of things can happen during surgery. It's why you sign all these forms, that say basically, if you die, then, hey, that's, you went in knowing that you were taking the chance. But Jeffrey, thank you for weighing in. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. David in Chicago. Hey, David.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good.
Happy New Year, by the way.
And the same back at you.
I was commenting on the young girl. I don't personally, believe that we have enough neuroscience knowledge to actually say whether she's brain dead or not. Because we, like that one caller before has said, we've had many comatose patients or that were assumed brain dead wake up, 3, 4
Well, actually, we haven't had many. There have apparently been a few, and there are neuroscientists who dispute that those people were correctly diagnosed as brain dead to begin with. But let's say that this does happen. It happens so very rarely, but still, when it does happen, it gets publicized like crazy. All the Terry Schiavo folks come out of the woodwork, but I think it's much more rare than you think. We did a literature search this morning on this and could not find any cases that were good, clear, solid, back it up, good science. Where everybody agreed this person is brain dead, and then they came back. I couldn't find one, but there may be one out there.
Again, we just don't know enough about the brain. We know lots about every other part of the body, but most even neuroscientists will tell you they don't know enough about the brain.
Yeah. Okay. So that's okay. I got it, David. Thank you for the call. Chris in White River, Arizona. Chris, we just have a minute to the break. You had some thoughts on Edward Snowden?
Yeah, on Edward Snowden, I was in intelligence, and, the man may be guilty, he may not be guilty, that's for the courts to decide. But he did bring out a very interesting topic about, all this, NSA snooping.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, too much information makes no information.
Yeah.
And the more they look, the worse it gets.
No, I agree. I think this is bad for the NSA. It's bad for the country. And the problem that Ed Snowden had was that because he worked for a private corporation, he had no whistleblower protections. And the president came out and said, I signed a whistleblower law. Well, that would have applied if Ed Snowden worked for the NSA, but he didn't. He worked for Booz Allen Hamilton, which was owned by, the Carlyle Group, which is owned by, in part, the Bin Laden family. So that's, unfortunate. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I find it interesting in the Jaheim McMath case, the people saying, keep her alive. Could that money be used to save somebody else's life? Barbara, watching Free Speech TV in Helena, Montana. Hey, we had a caller earlier named Helena. Or it's Helena, Montana. Now, how do you say it, Barbara?
Helena.
Okay. So she's...
I've talked to you before, Tom. How are you today?
I am fine, thank you. I hope you are well.
I'm good. Anytime I get a chance to plug Jimmy Carter, I like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
To me, he was the greatest president
of my life. I think he was probably the greatest president of my lifetime. And he's certainly the only one other than Dwight Eisenhower who didn't have a war. Well, Eisenhower had a few wars, I guess, who didn't have a war during his presidency, who didn't create a war. So.
Well, and who has lived a life of such honor and dignity from that point forward.
And one of the few who didn't cash in. I mean, Bill Clinton's worth hundreds of millions of dollars now, and Jimmy Carter's whatever, you know, he's still a peanut farmer.
He's a real authentic, genuine person.
Yeah, I agree.
About the case of the young 13-year-old.
Jahi McMath.
You know, I have a problem with for-profit hospitals and the insurance companies making any health care decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we can't get rid of the fraudulent corruption that is taking place in our healthcare system, there are no answers for any of us in any kind of crisis.
Yeah, but this is not a situation where, you know, some giant bureaucracy is saying, well, you know, in our rule book, line 7, page 34, it says.
Right.
This is an actual doctor.
I've had people in critical conditions in my lifetime, and one of them was hooked up to a machine hit by a train.
Ouch.
So they unplugged him and he died. I'm okay that they unplugged him, and I'm not voting for her to be unplugged.
Yeah.
But if we have a medical system where we don't have a one payer, we can never have justice or fairness in any of our processes of thinking of what the right way. There is a method of thinking right that only comes when we line up the inside of our heart with whatever the outside circumstances are.
But if we had a single-payer system, Barbara, there would be more incentive to pull a plug on this girl so that the resources could be used to save a half a dozen other people's lives.
Well, we're going to have to come to some real decision-making about
how to deal with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. Barbara, thank you for the call. I don't have an easy answer or a glib answer for this other than, you know, just if it's me, pull the plug, please. And that's about as on the record as you can get, I guess. Sue reminds me that the study where I was talking about the rats eating cocaine over and over again, and I wasn't reading it as a rat addicted to heroin is not rebelling against this. It was heroin, actually. Actually, morphine, which is to which heroin is converted in the body. So, morphine hydrochloride. And but anyway, the principle still applies. I thought that was interesting. And Carbocubulist says, why don't we have Bill Frist, you know, check a videotape and determine whether the girl's alive or not. I mean, you know, he's done that before. Priscilla in Delavan, Wisconsin?
Yes, uh-huh.
Hi, Priscilla.
Hi.
Welcome to the program. Thank you for
coming. Hi, Tom. Love you.
Thank you.
Listen, my daughter was in college and she had a blood clot to her brainstem for birth control pills.
Ooh.
6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
They told me she was brain dead, but she was really locked in. She had the locked-in syndrome, which is typical of people who have a problem with the brain stem. It's a stroke, but it didn't hit the brain. It hit the brain stem.
Yeah.
Anyway, the doctor at the time, the neurologist, happened to be, used to be the personal physician of the Shah of Iran.
Wow.
And remember Shah?
Oh, yeah.
He told me that she was brain dead. Mm-hmm. He was saying that she was brain dead because, well, first of all, they wanted me to harvest the organs. And secondly, I figured out that they were telling me this because they don't want families to have to go through all the trouble of, having this happen. Well, Well, wait, I've been taking care of her for 16 years at home, and she can enjoy life.
Mm-hmm.
She spells with her eyes. She can remember things from when we were little. I ask her, well, what was that person's name, blah, 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 you know, when you were little, and she'll remember. She designs cards just by moving her eyes.
Hmm.
No, she can't. She's on a ventilator. She can't move. She can't smile.
Mm-hmm.
She can't talk, but she looks up for yes and down for no.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a nice life here at home. We have wonderful friends and families. The nurses come and help me. She can't be alone, so, you know, if I have to go somewhere or something, we have nurses.
Sure.
And she has a nice life. She's happy, loves animals. We have two cats.
Yeah.
She likes to watch TV. We watch sometimes. We love you.
Yeah, thank you. I get it. And I, in fact, I watched my father go through this the last couple of days of his life. He had a stroke and he was locked in. And he could not move. He could not speak. But I'm quite sure clearly understood everything that was going on around him. And when I look back on it, I didn't realize that until maybe the last hour of his life. I would have done and said things probably quite differently during the couple of days that I was with him. I didn't know about locked-in syndrome at the time. But
She looks she looks vegetative.
Mm-hmm.
Three states of unconsciousness. There's vegetative, there's minimally conscious, and there's locked in.
Right.
Well, the people usually who have been mistakenly called, you know, vegetative are probably really minimally conscious, and they're every so often will come out. Not like you said, it's very rare, very
mm-hmm.
rare.
Mm-hmm.
But so to the degree of the severity of the brainstem stroke, such as my daughter has, have been people who've partially recovered
mm-hmm.
Due to the degree of the blockage.
Right. Yeah. It's got to be a tough one. Priscilla, I honor your commitment to your daughter, and thank you for calling and sharing your story with us.
Okay. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks. Happy New Year. I hope it's a good one. Claude in Monroe, New York. Hey, Claude. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How you doing, Tom? Glad to get on the show.
Thank you.
Like to concur with the woman who thought Jimmy Carter was a great president.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was, too. I think the economical royals tanked the economy on him so he wouldn't get reelected.
Well, but what happened was, you know, Reagan cut a deal, Casey, with the Iranians to hold the hostages.
They ruined the economy around him. It was remember, they had the gas lines and all that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they couldn't shoot him like they did Kennedy, so they decided to ruin him economically. You know?
Well, the Arab oil embargo actually did that.
Yes.
But anyhow.
Well, one thing I did want to bring up to you is one of my friends who was Norwegian said one time, he said, the real problem with America is that everything is for sale. Mm-hmm. And I always go back to that. I did want to tell you that I joined amend.org. I got online.
Move to amend.
Listening to your program, and I'm going to get very active and involved with it. I think that's the only thing that can be done. It seems kind of hopeless.
Yeah.
Sometimes you think about how bad it's been. I'm 62 years old. And I remember America when it was prosperous and when you could just go out and get a job and work hard, or two or three jobs and work hard and get ahead. And it seems like that's not here anymore. My wife lost her job. She just got cut off the unemployment benefits. She worked all her life since she was 17, lost a job, worked for one company for 21 years, fell down, broke her hand in nine places, went out on comp. When she came back after 4 months, they started to abuse her, and finally they let her go.
Wow.
And it's like unbelievable. It's like there's no protections for workers anymore. There's no loyalty to people. You know, my wife worked on this job for 21 years. And it's like, and the people that own the business are multimillionaires. You know, they own like 9 car dealerships, you know. And it's just like, doesn't anybody in America care anymore about, you know, the people who work for you?
I think, because the system is essentially sociopathic. I mean, the capitalism is a sociopathic system, which is why it needs regulation. You know, it needs a conscience, right, which is what sociopaths lack. We have to regulate capitalism and or re-regulate it. And we have been deregulating it consistently ever since the beginning of the Reagan era. And so, yeah, we've reached a point where the sociopaths and the sociopathic institutions are running everything. And I think you identified it, Claude. And good on you for signing up with movetoamend.org and making that your commitment for this year. I think that's a great New Year's resolution, whether you intended it that way or not. That's a great one. Claude, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. And thanks for watching us there in Monroe, New York.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
And now, the day's top headlines from Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, followed by the locally produced KABU Evening News. On tonight's news, we'll hear about an appeal challenging the NSA program of widespread electronic surveillance, a possible strike by Portland teachers next week, and an in-depth report on the testing of domestic drones in 6 U.S. states, including Oregon. All that and more, beginning at 5 o'clock. Stay tuned.
Peace talks begin today between South Sudan's two warring sides amidst continued fighting. Negotiators from the South Sudan government and rebel forces arrived in Ethiopia Wednesday after 2 weeks of violence that's left over 1,000 people dead and tens of thousands displaced. Both sides have signed on to a ceasefire, but clashes continue. The South Sudan government has declared a state of emergency in 2 states where rebels are in control of the capital. South Sudan Foreign Minister Barnaba Mariel Benjamin said his government is ready for unconditional dialogue.
The president had already formed his negotiating team, his dialogue team, since 48 hours ago, and this team now is ready to go this afternoon to Addis Ababa. So we are for dialogue, unconditional dialogue, without any conditions. It was the other side putting conditions and refusing to send a team of their own. They were refusing equally for the cessation of hostilities. The president has been on record, and he said, we don't want the people of South Sudan to die again in a senseless war.
South Sudan's fighting broke out last month after President Salva Kiir accused his former vice president of attempting a coup. Speaking in the capital of Juba, UN Special Envoy Hilda Johnson said both sides have committed atrocities.
Of violence in the past 2 weeks. There has been killings and brutality, grave human rights violations and atrocities committed. We have seen evidence of apparent ethnic targeting of South Sudanese citizens on ethnic grounds. This can lead to a perpetual cycle of violence that can destroy the fabric of the new nation. We need to do everything possible to prevent such a cycle of violence between the communities of South Sudan.
At least 11 people have been killed and 17 wounded in a bombing in Somalia's capital of Mogadishu. The attack targeted a hotel commonly visited by Somali government officials. 3 bombs were detonated within the span of an hour, at least one by a suicide bomber. The militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility. Iraq is facing major clashes between government forces and Sunni fighters in Anbar province. The violence erupted earlier this week after police raised a year-old Sunni protest camp in the provincial capital, Ramadi. Militants from al-Qaeda and Sunni groups are now said to be in control of large parts of Ramadi and Fallujah. On Wednesday, fighters attacked scores of police stations in Fallujah, setting fires and freeing dozens of prisoners. Iraq's currently seeing its worst violence since 2008. 3 of 4 Al Jazeera journalists detained in Egypt this week remain behind bars. Correspondent Peter Grest, producers Mohamed Fahmy and Bahar Mohamed, and cameraman Mohamed Fawzi were arrested in Cairo on accusations of, quote, spreading false news, unquote, and holding meetings with the Muslim Brotherhood. Only Fawzi has been released so far. The 3 prisoners have faced repeated interrogation, and 1 has received medical treatment for an injury. Speaking from Al Jazeera headquarters in Doha, correspondent Bernard Smith called for his colleague's release.
We would like our colleagues to be released immediately from custody in Cairo. They are journalists simply doing their job in Egypt, reporting on a variety of stories from Egypt, reporting all sides of the story from Egypt.
Secretary of State John Kerry returns to Israel and the occupied territories today in a bid to ramp up peace talks between Israelis and Palestinians. The New York Times reports Israeli officials have privately decided to delay an announcement of new settlement construction until after Kerry leaves so as not to embarrass him during his visit. Israel's expected to announce yet another round of settlement building in the occupied West Bank, despite ostensibly negotiating over the creation of a Palestinian state there. Earlier today, an 85-year-old Palestinian man died after inhaling tear gas fired by Israeli forces at demonstrators rallying near the West Bank town of Nablus. The Palestinian ambassador to the Czech Republic has died in an explosion at his home. Czech officials say Jamal al-Jamal appears to have accidentally triggered an explosive device attached to a safe he'd been trying to open. Millions of Americans have begun receiving health insurance after the coverage provided by President Obama's signature health care law went into effect Wednesday. The first day of Obamacare's insurance plans coincided with the expansion of Medicaid coverage under the law to about half the states. In addition to the plans going live, provisions have also taken effect that ban insurance companies from denying coverage based on pre-existing conditions or limiting reimbursements for essential treatment. In an opinion piece, the filmmaker and single-payer advocate Michael Moore writes that Obamacare is both awful for strengthening the insurance industry and a godsend for helping low-income Americans obtain life-saving insurance. Moore says, quote, "Let's not take a victory lap yet, but build on what there is to get what we deserve, universal quality health care," he wrote. Bill de Blasio began his term as New York City mayor Wednesday with a bold pledge to tackle income inequality in the nation's largest city. De Blasio was sworn in Wednesday following last year's historic victories in the Democratic primary and general election on a progressive platform. In his inaugural address, de Blasio focused on his campaign pledge to address what he called a tale of two cities, a growing gap between rich and poor.
When I said I would take dead aim at the tale of two cities, I meant it. And we will do it. I will honor the faith and the trust you have placed in me. And we will give life to the hope of so many in our city. We will succeed as one city. And we know this won't be easy. It will require all that we can muster, and it won't be accomplished only by me. It will be accomplished by all of us.
The civil rights attorney Lynn Stewart has returned home from prison after a federal judge ordered her compassionate release. Lynn Stewart is 74 years old. She's dying from late-stage breast cancer. She'd served almost 4 years of a 10-year sentence for distributing press releases on behalf of her client, Omar Abdurrahman, an Egyptian cleric known as the Blind Sheikh. Stewart arrived to a group of cheering supporters in New York City Wednesday. We'll have our national broadcast exclusive later in the show. Colorado has enacted a law allowing recreational sales of marijuana following approval by voters in late 2012. The world's first state-licensed marijuana retail stores opened their doors Wednesday to long lines of customers. The first person to make a purchase was Sean Azaridi, an Iraq War veteran suffering from PTSD. Azaridi spoke to reporters along with marijuana advocate Betty Aldworth.
Now I get to use recreational cannabis to help alleviate my PTSD, and it's a stepping stone for other states to help other veterans as well.
In Colorado, we expect almost $400 million in sales next year. And across the nation, the marijuana industries will create $2.34 billion of economic activity.
Possession and private use of marijuana has been legal in Colorado over the past year, but it will now be legally produced and sold as well. Around three dozen stores have been licensed to sell to customers.
Those are some of the top headlines from Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! The full program can be heard at democracynow.org and beginning on Monday, January 6th at 4 p.m. every weekday on KBOO. It is 5:01. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The evening news is next.
Tune in to Plugged In every first and third Fridays from 10 p.m. to midnight with host DJ Tronic. Tronic does a live mix in the studio featuring the latest in house, techno, tech house, breaks, dubstep, and more. Tronic also has guest DJs in the studio and often talks about upcoming parties, club nights, and more. That's Plugged In every first and third Fridays at 10 p.m. only on KBOO Portland.
KBOO is seeking a station manager to lead our dynamic 45-year-old non-commercial radio station. Ideal candidates will have nonprofit management experience, the ability to thrive and work collaboratively in a decentralized organization, and the ability to delegate, plan, and organize people to meet goals and objectives. If this interests you, please go to kboo.fm/stationmanagerhire2013.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Congress approves the domestic testing of drones in several U.S. states, including three locations in Oregon.
New state legislation attempts to bar citizens from using pesticides at home.
And multiple social media outlets, including Snapchat and Skype, have been hacked or compromised in the past week.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 2nd, 2014. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Jen Chavez. The family of Brad Lee Morgan, a 21-year-old